This is Steve Sherlock with another in a series of podcasts for Franklin Matters. The next three will have basically the same introduction. So podcast numbers 33, 34, and 35 will take three separate parts of a panel discussion that was held on Monday morning, March 9th, on the government and its role in the economy. The panel included Congressman James McGovern, State Senator Scott Brown, State Senator Karen Spilka, Majority Leader of the House, our own Representative Jim Valley, Town Administrator Jeff Nutting, and Town Council Chairperson Chris Feely. The panel was held, as I mentioned, at Franklin High School and put together by Michael Walsh. The moderator was Franklin High School senior April Crean. The session was well attended by students, but only a handful of citizens took part. Now you can share in that opportunity. What will follow is the audio recording of the panel discussion split into three sections. For timeline, it's approximately 20 minutes for each of the first two and approximately 10 minutes for the third. The first part covers the introduction of the panel, the moderator, and the very first question, to which all the panel had a chance to talk to. The second part covers three questions. The third part also covers three questions, and the closing is cut off by the bell for the change of the class periods and the students had to leave. Thanks to all the panelists for sharing their thoughts in this forum. Thanks also to Mike Walsh for the opportunity to provide this recording for you who missed this to take part.
Thank you. Branching off of that, Senator Brown had a question for you. You talked a little about reform in your answer. The local Daily News quoted you as saying that Governor Patrick has been here for 2.5 years and has not done any meaningful reform. If you were in charge, what meaningful reform would you implement?
Well, one of the first things I would do is adopt the Senate President's Transportation Reform Plan that's on the table now. In over 20 years, we could potentially save $6.2 billion, according to the House Ways and Means Chair's assessment of that. In addition, I've already filed quite a few bills, reform bills, one of which is to, I'm not sure if you're aware of it, but if we work a day, we get paid for a full year of our pension. That's one thing that I've moved to strike. In addition, there's also a provision that allows a legislator, if they've worked for 20 years, they're under 55 and they either don't get reelected or they choose not to run, they can double their pension. There are a whole lot of sacred causes, as Rep Valley was talking about, that we really need to look at and try to streamline. You know, within that transportation reform plan is a lot of merging the Mass Turnpike, Mass Highway, trying to eliminate a lot of overlap. I think that's a good way to start. And then, as Rep Valley said, everything is really on the table right now.
Thank you. Just to come to the governor's defense, and I feel like I have to. I'm fully in favor of the Senate President's Transportation Reorganization Plan. I had a lot of input in it. The governor did file his own transportation reorg plan. I do believe we in the legislature will take action over the course of the next month, month and a half, to reform, totally reform, for the first time in decades, the way that our transportation services and systems are delivered. To his credit, too. I mean, I don't agree with everything that he files or every piece, but that's part of the democratic process, and that's one of the wonderful things about it. But he has filed also some pension reform, as Senator Brown refers to, that I've signed on to some of the same bills for reforming, some ethics reform, and some municipal change, which changes the way that we allow our municipalities to either raise funds or spend or freeing up mandates. The process is slow, and I think that's part of the whole overall system. If you think about it, laws take a while to change. There's a debate in the legislature. We were just sworn in this session in January, and I think that there will be a lot of reforms. As was stated by my colleagues, with fiscal crisis, there come many opportunities, and we will consider things that we may not have considered in the past to make the changes for pension, for ethics, for municipal relief, and transportation, and many other areas. Thanks.
Thank you. In reference to what Congressman McGovern said a little while ago about people's faith in the economy, how do you think that market panic has contributed to the economic downturn? Anyone who's interested?
As Congressman McGovern referenced, when you think things are not going well, it's almost a self-professing prophecy. We stop spending money, we stop going out to dinner, we stop buying new cars, and those industries have to lay off people because they're not doing the same business. And then those same people are not spending money. And it begins to become a spiral down. And until such things happen as the stimulus bill that they referred to that they passed, and people feel more confident that they're able to borrow money, well, then they will spend money again, and the economy will turn and start to create new jobs, and things will be better.
And just a quick example, in Franklin alone, just because folks aren't buying cars at the same rate as they have in the past, we'll collect about $400,000 less in money from excise tax this year than last year, simply because people have stopped buying cars. And we're one small community in all of America. Multiply that by everybody, you can see it's billions of dollars in that one item alone.
Maybe, I said before that I think that there's, in crisis, there's opportunity. And this is only my opinion, but my observation is we've transitioned, at least in my lifetime, from manufacturing industrial-based economy to really a consumer-based economy. And a consumer-based economy means you have to consume for it to continue. And we've been very good consumers, fueled by very cheap money and cheap debt. When our parents were, or maybe my parents, maybe your grandparents, were young, and they were raising their family, people might go in and get a mortgage, and it was, you know, maybe, you know, 8%, or sometimes it went up to 18%. But people took that very seriously. They borrowed money. It was a certain percentage of their income. They borrowed it for their house, and everything else they would fund out of pocket. The health care. They basically, you know, live on what they could afford and buy what they could afford. And we transitioned to an economy. I mean, it started probably, you know, when I was in college, started getting the credit card applications and, you know, cheap money, free money, you know, take a piece of plastic. You didn't have to earn the money. You could borrow the money and pay it back later. We transitioned psychologically to a consumer-based economy. So more and more people became involved in service industries that service the consumer-based economy. Less people were manufacturing things. It was more expensive here to manufacture, so it went overseas. So we've really had a global shift in the last generation, the last 30, 40 years. And in my opinion, it just couldn't continue, because people eventually just reached their debt limit. They became choked, and all it took was one hiccup for it to all fall apart. It was like a big house of cards. So I think the challenge for you, and the challenge for us as a government, but the challenge for you sitting in the audience is, what are you going to do for your employment? What are you going to do? How are you going to earn your money? I mean, everybody wants a quick fix, like this is over in 15 minutes. But I think what this really becomes is about a challenge to us and to the next generation as to what type of country we're going to do. What are we going to produce? Who are we going to sell it to? I mean, this is a global issue. And we can lower interest rates and make things more affordable and try to continue doing business the way we did it. Or we can accept the challenge and say, what do we really need as Americans? What do we really need in our lives? Do we really need, you know, 10 container ships from overseas, you know, docked off our waters every day that we can't even dock because they can't get in fast enough and unload, you know, consumer goods? So it's just, for me, the challenge for us going forward is really about what are we going to do? Are we going to be producers? Are we going to be consumers? Are we going to be a combination? Reach the middle ground where it's something that is sustaining. It sustains itself. So I know I'm a little off topic, but it's just something that I think we need to reflect upon as a society, because that's what's really going to get us, you know, to the next, you know, get us through this. Not how are we going to flood the market with, you know, print more money and, you know, try to get out of this, you know, without pain, because I think there's going to be a significant amount of pain eventually. If not, you know, we can push it off a couple of years with some policies to tweak things, but I think really the challenge is up to us as a society, you know, as to how we're going to grab this, and we're all, like I said, we're all in this together.
In reference to what Representative Dye said about people overspending, what are your thoughts on helping out people whose homes are going through foreclosures and, you know, businesses in the bailouts on Wall Street, U.S. automakers, things like that? Do you think that's a good idea, or do you think that they should be allowed to go under?
No, I don't think it's a good idea to let people go under. I've had some people say, why should we help anybody who got into a bad deal with their home if they have a mortgage that they can't afford, and you know, now they're in trouble and they're about to foreclose. Yeah, that's their problem. That's not my problem. Well, the problem is that if a house is foreclosed on, it becomes vacant, and then if you live next to that person, you know, and you have a vacant house, you know, next to you, your property value goes down. If somebody house is foreclosed on, that means they're not paying local property taxes, so less revenue is coming into, you know, the communities to help support the infrastructure. Look, this is a mess that we're in. And yeah, a lot of people got in over their heads, and a lot of people got sucked into bad deals. But, you know, the prospect of allowing millions and millions of people to have their homes foreclosed upon does not, you know, maybe it teaches them a lesson, but it also messes things up in our economy in a big way. The auto manufacturers, we need to do something to help protect those jobs. And I'm going to tell you something. I think that part of the problem has been that the United States has kind of lost its innovative edge. We used to be, you know, we were always out front on the latest technologies. You know, we came up with the, with, you know, no matter what the industry was, we got lazy. You know, why is it that we're not producing the most fuel-efficient automobile in the world? Why haven't we made the transition to electric cars or some other kind of automobile that means that we rely less on oil and gasoline? And we all talk about we want independence when it comes to energy, yet we still do the same old when it comes to automobiles. We need to incentivize the auto industry, you know, to move into a different direction, move into the 21st century. You know, look, the way out of this mess is jobs, jobs, jobs. And I think that those jobs, you know, lie in the areas of environmental technologies, ways to help deal with global warming, ways to help, you know, help us make this solar transition, investing in fuel cell technologies, I mean, wind power, all this stuff that we see spurts of it coming across, you know, growing all across the country. Bottom line is that's the future. You say, what are we making 5 years from now? It's going to be an area of improving our environment, making more fuel-efficient automobiles, making our houses more fuel-efficient. It's going to be in the area of medical research and medical science. Do you want to save money? Find a cure to Alzheimer's disease. You know, you wouldn't have any problems with funding Medicaid. You know, we need to invest aggressively in medical research. That's what we have been known for. And over the years, we've gotten kind of lazy in those areas. We haven't invested as much. And we've allowed some things like medical science to be politicized, so we've restricted research in certain areas. I'm glad that President Obama is going to lift the restrictions on stem cell research. You know, I think that will encourage more researchers from around the world to come to the United States and try to find these new cures. So, look, we're in a mess right now, but I am confident we're going to get out of it. And I believe that the policies that the President has put forward are good policies. And I would just, one word of caution. Try to ignore those pop economists that you see on the morning talk shows or on MSNBC. These people get up and scream and yell. They're more entertainers than they are economists. Bottom line is, investing in the economy, creating more jobs, is what we're trying to do here, will help us get out of this mess.
If I could just jump in a little bit. I was on the predatory lending bill that we recently passed in Massachusetts, and part of it starts, quite frankly, and with all due respect, with personal responsibility, the misrepresentations not only with the buyers, but also with the mortgage brokers. They just were trying to, you know, scam the system to try to, you know, sell the loan and ultimately get the loan with really no real intention of paying it back. So if you look at it one way, yeah, you say we have to save these houses and we have to you know, backfill and give them a break and you know, protect them, when in fact some of them may have been using fraudulent means to get those mortgages. On the other hand, you have, in the event that they do go to foreclosure, you have a whole new economic cycle starting of young home buyers like yourselves and others that could go into those vacant neighborhoods and go into those vacant areas with a legitimate mortgage from a Rentham Cooperative Bank, a Ben Franklin, or, you know, any local bank, and buy those homes at a reduced rate so they can start their lives again. So there's a natural correction. And some of the, I feel some of the things that have been done in not only state but federally have kind of put a stop on that, so there's not a natural correction as there has been in years past. It's a cyclical correction that I don't think is going to happen, and things are artificially protected at this point. But, you know, once again, we, as Rep Valley said, you know, we can pass blame all over the place. If you want to talk about past presidents, congressional leaders, you know, there's blame everywhere. But I do agree with Rep Valley that we do need to work together, and we're, at least at the state level, I know we're trying to do that in the legislature, and we have quite a few challenges ahead of us.
I would just like to add that you hear a lot of the foreclosure situations about people who either went way above their means knowingly, they took out mortgages knowingly, they could afford it, or the banks disregarded the information or didn't even ask for information. But you also have situations where a husband and wife were working, dual incomes, they were working hard to support their family. Both have been laid off in this economy. And now their home is up for foreclosure. We tend to not hear about those stories. People who have done the right thing, they thought they were doing the right thing, they're working hard, supporting their family, contributing to our economy and our society, and through no fault of their own, their company went bankrupt, belly up, whatever, they're laid off. It's those families that I think we owe it to, and I'm glad that through the Obama administration and some steps I think that we're going to be taking in the state government as well, that we'll be getting the banks to be sitting down and actually talking to these folks to see if they can rework the loan. Those families should not be left out. And I think, so I think when you guys hear about, you know, helping people who had too high mortgages, they shouldn't have taken them out, there's a whole other sector of families that were doing the right thing. We need to help them. We need to help them. We need to help the transition, as Congressman McGovern said as well, and I said earlier, it's jobs. This session, I'm chair of the Committee on Economic Development and Emerging Technologies, and my focus will be on helping to create jobs. The economic stimulus from the federal government, the money we're getting, should create approximately 80,000 jobs over the next few years in Massachusetts alone. That coupled with what I hope we can do on the state, we are transitioning, for example, from manufacturing. We used to have, you picture a lot of the manufacturing at the mills where the waterfalls are, textile and other things. We are still a manufacturing state. We have just changed what we manufacture. We have companies from the life sciences, the health, the medical industry, and lots of other areas, but manufacturing is alive and well and thriving in Massachusetts. That goes back to one of the roles that we on state government can help that transition to make sure that not only is there the funding for the infrastructure to help that happen and the technology transfer so that the research and development that occurs in Massachusetts, when it comes time for the company to decide where should they build their manufacturing plant, we help them stay in Massachusetts to create the jobs to manufacture what the research and development developed. So there are a lot of things that we can be doing, and I'm really hopeful and excited about the possibilities. On one hand, it sometimes is a little depressing to read the papers. On the other hand, as I think we've all noted, this is a time for opportunity, so it's also very exciting.
This podcast has been a public service provided to my fellow citizens of Franklin, Mass. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.blogspot.com. If you have any questions or comments, you can reach me directly via the links on that page. The musical intro and closing is from the PodSafe Music Network, John Schmidt. Powerful, exhilarating piano music. I hope you enjoy.